KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners' weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates, held as a virtual meeting during the pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
Yeah, that's all right. I'll do it after.
It's later.
Willie Bentz is in the attendees, and I'm not sure. I do not see Dr. Berry yet. I don't believe that's Dr. Berry on the phone. Keep an eye out.
If it is Dr. Berry on the phone, please hit star 9.
Yes. Oh, there's
there she
Dr.
is.
Berry. Great. So it is 9:45. Welcome to our KPTZ listeners. Welcome to Dr. Berry. And Carolyn, you bring in Willie over.
Oh, I thought I did.
Thank you. Always glad to see you, Dr. Berry, even though the news doesn't seem to be getting any better. So.
Not yet, unfortunately, but we're working on it. Very nice to see you guys. So unfortunately, yes, the COVID-19 news does continue to get worse. Nationally, cases are up 64%. They are 10 times what they were a month ago, before really many states all kind of opened at the same time, and we really have seen the surge that resulted from that. Hospitalizations nationwide are up 65%. Case numbers and hospitalizations continue to be led primarily by the South. Louisiana, Florida, and Mississippi are all experiencing hospitals moving to crisis standards of care. Deaths, unfortunately, have now also started to increase quite significantly nationwide, so they're up 113% at this point. In Washington state, cases are up 166%. Hospitalizations are up 59%. Deaths so far have not significantly increased. That is usually a lagging indicator. We would likely see that starting in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But we are seeing individual hospitals throughout Washington state that have ICUs that are full. And that are closed to new admissions. I can say, having recently spoke with Jefferson Healthcare, we have experienced challenges getting our own patients into ICU level care in the Puget Sound region. So we're already seeing a significant strain on the hospital system. That is driven by a couple different factors. Certainly we have a surge in non-COVID patients as well. So we often do have a lot of, for instance, trauma in the summer, and that is filling up hospital beds. We also are seeing a surge in COVID cases taking ICU beds, and we are unfortunately seeing a surge in COVID cases among healthcare workers, largely unvaccinated healthcare workers. And so that is also putting a strain on that system. We've certainly seen some outbreaks among healthcare workers in the Kitsap area, and that has strained our local transfer options. In Jefferson County, we have unfortunately seen cases continue to rise. So our case number is 235 per 100,000. So we've crossed the 200 mark. We are up to 597 cases so far in this response. In Clallam County, the numbers are even worse. We're up to 2,018 cases, or 392 cases per 100,000. It's more than either county has ever seen. Kitsap is quite high as well, with 293 cases per 100,000. They have gone up sixfold in the last 2 weeks. So really dramatic rises in the Kitsap area. Really, at this point, I think there are a few key things for the public to know. We are seeing really incredible rises in cases, really unprecedented numbers in our region. We've never seen anything like this before. 80% of the virus we send for sequencing now comes back Delta variant, which is dramatically more transmissible than the COVID, the wild type COVID that came before. And early indications from data that is being analyzed as we speak is that it actually is also more severe for each person who gets it. And that's really consistent with the experience that we're seeing in our outbreaks, in our hospitalizations. We're seeing younger people get hospitalized, and we're seeing a higher proportion of people who get infected getting hospitalized. We're also seeing just a shocking amount of disease of our tests that we're running. So in Clallam County, our percent positivity is 10%. I don't have those numbers yet today for Jefferson, but 1 in 10 people who go to get tested are positive. We're working really hard to increase testing capacity to meet that massive surge in demand with our partners at Jefferson Healthcare. We are starting to run into supply chain issues, however. The over-the-counter tests, as many have experienced, are largely off the shelves. We are experiencing delays in shipments of tests from the state. So that's who provides the tests that we give to contacts of cases. And we are seeing significant delays there. They said they're the demand for testing has gone up sixfold for them as well. And so they're working to catch up. Just want folks to know that we're working really hard to change that. Jefferson Healthcare does have their drive-through open, and they have also actually started putting tests for people to pick up. They started advertising that on social media so that to try to offload the system a little bit, that if you need a test, they're also offering them for pickup. We plan to do the same at the health department, both in the Port Townsend office and in South County, once we get our tests from the state, but they have not yet arrived. We're experiencing a delay there. So we hope to have that operational soon. It is not operational yet, so please don't show up at the health department for a test, but we are working to get that going. We are also seeing supply chain breakdowns in other areas, largely driven by outbreaks. So there are many, many large-scale outbreaks on the east side of the mountains where our food is produced and packaged. And so we are starting to see grocery store limitations. Certainly we're still food in the grocery stores, but we are seeing breakdowns there. Some items not arriving, particularly in our more rural communities. I know we've experienced that on the West End, particularly seeing some shortages out there. That is just for those of you who are running into it, that is driven by COVID outbreaks. It's the people who pick that food or the people who package that food have COVID. Really, that's driving the vast majority of the shortages we're seeing. We do encourage folks, only buy what you need. We are not at a point where you need to stock up, but you may see some of your favorite items might not be there right now, and some delays in that space. We are also seeing large scale outbreaks in multiple critical infrastructure sectors. So certainly we've talked about the jail outbreaks here. We've seen outbreaks in other public utility districts around the state. And so it's a really critical time to get the virus under control to keep society properly functioning. One of the tools, so there are kind of two main tools that we have to do that. One is getting vaccinated, and the other is wearing a mask. And so that is why on Friday, I issued a mask mandate for Jefferson and Clallam counties for all indoor spaces, regardless of vaccination status. The vaccine is still incredibly effective. It is still the number one thing you can do to reduce your risk of catching COVID and transmitting it to others and of getting hospitalized or dying of COVID. However, it's not 100%. And it's not enough on its own, certainly not with the amount of viral infection we're seeing in our community. We really need to get everybody masking up when they're indoors again. So it is mandatory indoors for anyone 5 or older. It is recommended for anyone 2 to 5. There are rare medical exemptions, but those are very, very rare. We usually see those with folks who have a sensory disorder, autism spectrum disorder, sometimes can't tolerate a mask. And then some folks with advanced cardiopulmonary disease sometimes can't tolerate a mask, but pretty much everyone else can. And it is required in indoor spaces. There are a couple exemptions to this rule. One of the key ones is if you are in an office setting and you are documented to be vaccinated and you are 6 feet apart from other people, so you're not interacting with anybody, that is one case where you could take off your mask. But if you interact with anyone, you have to put it back on. And also in restaurants. So I apologize for the lack of clarity in the order on that. But if you are going into a restaurant and you are at your table, you can take off your mask to eat. So it is always okay to take off your mask to eat or sleep. But it is important to acknowledge that restaurants do carry some risk because you have a lot of unmasked people in there. And it is best practice for the protection of the servers to put your mask back on when you are interacting with them. So when the wait staff is at your table, put your mask back on while you're talking to them. You can take it off again when you're eating. That level of detail is not required, but I do recommend it as someone who knows a lot of people in the service industry. Masks make an incredible difference, so does vaccination. It's not too late to make any of these changes, but it is a critical time to do so. One other key question that has come up on Friday, there was a lot of news. There was the mask mandate announcement, and then there was also the announcement from the American College of Immunization Practices and the CDC on a recommendation of a third dose of the COVID-19 for a unique population. So there is a group who we know cannot respond as well to their vaccine as other people, and that is those who are immunosuppressed. The CDC is now recommending a third dose of the mRNA vaccine, so Moderna or Pfizer. If you got one of those, if you are in this unique group. So it's not by age, but if it's you have a primary immunodeficiency, so you were born with a genetic disorder, that means your immune system doesn't function quite right. If you are receiving active cancer care, so if you have active cancer, you qualify, or if you are on immunosuppressive therapies. One of the most common ones you'll see for that is prednisone. Many different kinds of medications you might take for autoimmune disorders will also qualify you for that. If you have active HIV and not an adequately suppressed viral load, you also qualify. Now, that came out late on Friday. I would like to let folks know our healthcare system is working very hard to meet the demand for that vaccine. I would encourage everyone to wait, give them a good 48 hours to get their to get things in order. I was just on the phone with Jefferson Healthcare. They are actively planning how to plan for vaccination of that group. We are seeing, the healthcare system is already under stress. And so if we all call to get our vaccine today, that just adds to that stress. I very much empathize with how much people want to be protected right now. But likely in the next couple of days, there will be an announcement of a large-scale vaccination effort for that group in particular. We are also calling, coordinating with local pharmacies to see if they are willing to participate in that effort. So I would say don't rush out today. Likely in the next 48 hours, you should have an answer for how we want to get this done. So with that, I will take any questions.
Heidi.
I've gotten a couple that are in the same theme, but slightly different from each other. So I want to read them both to you and get your feedback. So one is from a business in the community. And the question is if a school, business, or other entity requires name, contact information, and proof of vaccination in order to enter that establishment, may that organization, students, employees, or clients remain unmasked as long as adequate ventilation and social distancing is available?
So right now, under the current mandate, it would be possible if they truly were verifying vaccination status and if people were 6 feet apart. You need both in order to have to not wear a mask. So under, for instance, the office worker exception, if you're truly verifying vaccination status, everybody's vaccinated and they're 6 feet apart, that would meet the letter of the law. My worry is I don't want to see large packed indoor crowds of unmasked people at this point.
So the second one was, I think you just answered it, but it was an office setting and they are also requiring proof of vaccination for their staff who are working in that setting. And so if they're working 6 feet apart, it sounds like it's okay, but.
And okay. we should have a link to the actual order online. We didn't get into some of the nitty gritty details in the press release like that, but that is actually addressed in the order itself. But they're long. I encourage you to skip over the many whereases and then get into the meat of the order a little later down.
Okay, that was it for me. Thank you.
No worries.
Greg?
Yep. Thank you. Grim affair currently, and I guess I don't know, it feels like deja vu all over again. So I've talked to business owners that are glad for clarity on masking mandate, and some that are, we're all vaccinated, we're ready to go. I mean, it's an imposition. I think we recognize that is a really good defense for the community spread. So I guess my question is, if someone comes into a store and says, I have a medical exemption, what sort of proof should they have with them when they do that? And this is a debate from last year, but I just wanted to
Technically, under the ADA, you can't ask someone for proof. You just ask them for you ask them if they have a medical exemption, and then you need to let them. I would encourage folks to be thoughtful about using that exemption. It is rare that it needs to be used. But the other alternative for a business, if you are concerned, is to offer what you have to do is you have to offer adequate services to that person. So for instance, if you are a grocery store and your rule is no unmasked people come in here, then you have to have an option for curbside pickup so that they can meet their needs without coming in. So as long as you are offering a service to meet their needs, that's another workaround so that you're not having unmasked people in your store. But I would say, having had to navigate this a lot and a lot of pushback around it in Clallam County last year, as someone in the service sector, I would just take their word for it, help them get what they need, and help them get back out. Don't get in a fight with people. That just makes it worse. Now they're spewing virus for a long period of time. Just help it be quick if it's going to be a situation like that.
Great. Thank you. Maybe I have one more question, but I think my questions are mostly reflected in the KPTZ question. Thank you.
And as far as enforcement goes, we will take reports at the health department if you receive a food permit or a alcohol permit. We do work closely with the Liquor and Cannabis Board and can revoke those if people are not following guidance. Generally, we always try to work with folks first. We will give you a call, see what's going on, assess the situation, see if we can fix a few things and get things back on track. If someone refuses to comply, they're having large numbers of unmasked people in their business, we can and will revoke permits in those settings. For folks that don't receive permits from us, generally those will be referred to whatever their regulatory agency is that really licenses their business.
Can I jump in with a couple,
yeah,
Dr. Berry?
Yes.
Great. First, it seems in looking at our data that we have a much higher percentage of cases in vaccinated people that I'm seeing in other kind of national averages or statewide averages that are being kind of advertised. Can you speak to that? If we're at the 89-90% of cases are unvaccinated, why are we at 10% then vaccinated, whereas a lot of the country is at 2 or 3?
Yeah, so what we are seeing is similar breakthrough rates in Jefferson County compared to our neighboring counties. So we have a similar breakthrough rate in Clallam, similar breakthrough rate in King and Pierce and Snohomish. Couple different things are driving that. One is that we actually have a really high percentage of vaccinated people. So just statistically, you're gonna see a larger percentage of your new cases be among the vaccinated compared to other places. And some of it is also just how that number is calculated. So when you look at a lot of national numbers, what they're looking at is the percent of vaccine positive cases over all cases in the entire response. But the vaccine wasn't really available for the first half of the response. And so we only calculate that number from February on, because that's when vaccine was available. So your denominator is much, much smaller. And so that's driving a lot of the difference that you see. The other key thing is to differentiate between percent of your vaccinated people who are getting positive. Ours is still well under 1% for that one. And that's commonly the number you'll hear in the national discourse, which is a good way of looking at the number. If you're vaccinated, your probability of getting COVID is quite low. But the number we report is the percent of our positive cases that are vaccinated, which is a slightly different number.
Gotcha. And anything to note about types of transmissions, trends that we're seeing, similar pattern as to where people are getting contracting COVID, or is that shifting to more community transmission?
We are seeing our first cases of community transmission where we don't know how they got it. We are certainly seeing cases of multiple introductions. So if you have a large community event that's indoors, what we're often finding now is multiple people bringing it in, not just one. So it's not just one person who went to church who was positive. It's five now. So you're getting COVID from multiple places if you're in an indoor environment. That's definitely a change from where we were. We're still seeing a lot of unvaccinated travel. That is still driving a disturbing number of our cases. And then we're starting to see more cases in social gatherings. Certainly breakthrough can happen. Transmission from people who are vaccinated can happen. It is very uncommon. The vast majority of the time it is vaccinated, unvaccinated to vaccinated, and still primarily driven. When we see breakthrough, most often there's a plane involved, or a large indoor area, or a small indoor area with a large crowd. That's usually causing most breakthrough. There are always exceptions, but that's most of our cases.
Great. Thank you. All right. Should we move on to KPTZ?
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm just curious, do you think the CDC is going to start reporting breakthroughs again? I mean, just hearing you talk about the different ways at looking at breakthrough infections and how you can, I want to help convince more people to get vaccinated now. I feel like the evidence continues to support it. But at the same time, you know, any argument that there are, you know, breakthroughs are happening is being used to devalue the vaccinations at the same time. So I guess is the CDC or the state gonna kind of find a way to talk about this so we can parse it more simply?
I hope so. I don't know about the CDC. I do know the state is working on a dashboard that people can read. One thing I hope that gets into there is a graph I've seen them do of breakthrough versus not breakthrough. And it's really just a tiny, tiny percentage when you look at the cases. And then when you look at hospitalizations, it's dramatically lower. It's a tiny, tiny fraction of our hospitalizations that are people who are vaccinated. But most commonly they are people who are very elderly or people who are immunosuppressed. And so I think it is still important to remember that there are people who are vaccinated who are not fully protected. And part of why the rest of us get vaccinated is to protect them. There is a lot of misinformation about breakthrough. There is a common misconception I've heard that, all of our cases are breakthrough. They're not. Still, the vast majority of our cases are unvaccinated people. And then there's a common misconception that people who are vaccinated are these like secret super spreaders. They're not. You're contagious for a shorter period of time. You're less likely to get infected in the first place and still less likely to spread it to someone else. So looking at our outbreaks that we have defined, not a single one of them was started by a breakthrough infection. They were started by unvaccinated people. And unfortunately, vaccinated people were kind of caught in the crossfire rather than causing it. Any other questions before we move to KPTZ? Okay. So this questioner, I think we'll just read it because I think it's helpful for people for how they think about it. They say, I went to the concert on the dock. It was an outdoor event, drew hundreds of people. I was there for maybe 15 minutes. I'm fully vaccinated. Since I was outdoors, I didn't wear a mask. Now I'm hearing some people say that large crowds can be a super spreader event. Should I be worried? I would say no. If you're a fully vaccinated person and you're outside, that risk is really low. But we do recommend masks in crowded outdoor settings. So I wasn't at the concert on the dock, but if you're back to back with a lot of people, that's the one outdoor time that I would recommend putting a mask on. But generally, even those are not super spreader events. Super spreader events are almost always inside. Or what we see is it's not the outdoor event itself, it's that drew a lot of people to town and then people all went into a bar. And then we saw a super spreader event there. It's usually that there was an outdoor component, an indoor component to the outdoor event that led to the super spreader event. So I would not fear that the concert on the dock was a super spreader event, but going forward, if you're in a crowded outdoor space, I would recommend wearing a mask, but I would not be afraid from having gone to an outdoor space. Another question that I think is good is, with the Delta variant on the loose, is 6 feet still enough distance for social separation? And should that apply indoors or outdoors, or if people are screaming or yelling or singing? So I would say what we are seeing with the Delta variant is we are seeing it spread across 6 feet in indoor spaces. So just being 6 feet apart from someone else is not enough, not with the Delta variant. We are truly seeing aerosol spread. We're seeing large scale viral loads. When we look at the church outbreaks that we've seen, we're seeing it travel far beyond 6 feet in those spaces. But there's a lot of different things that make it high risk. You guys have heard me talk about them before, but I'm going to reiterate them because I think they're important. So they're the number of people. So your probability of getting infected is a whole lot higher if it's 100 people than if it's 5. They are how close you are together, though that's not a perfect shield. So having some space between you and other people makes a difference. Having a mask on makes a difference. Airflow makes a difference. So that's why we care about outside, but it also matters when you're inside. If you go to church and you open the windows, that actually helps a ton than if you're in kind of a stuffy environment. And then it matters what you're doing. If you're yelling, singing, playing, you know, wind instruments, that actually does increase transmission. We know that. That it can travel farther in those spaces. So as far as, you know, how I would think about that is, if you're indoors, put a mask on, make sure you're vaccinated. And then if you need to go to an indoor environment where people are going to be closer together, really think about ventilation. Think about opening windows, think about things like that. And if you, if that's not an option, do consider if you need to go to that indoor environment, especially if you are at high risk of complications. Is it still reasonably safe for small groups of totally vaccinated people to meet indoors without masks, without social distancing? I would say, you know, all of our decisions are on a spectrum of safety. So there is nothing that is 100% safe except for staying in your own household. But I do think we need socialization in our life to be healthy. And so what I would recommend is if you're, you know, if you're fully vaccinated, you know, you can gather indoors with other fully vaccinated people, but there is a small risk of a breakthrough infection in those spaces. And I think that's important for people to know. So if you're in a really high risk group, say you're 85 and you've got diabetes, I would think about having your indoor environments become a little bit more like pods again. So pick who your social circle is, have that be a stable social circle. And whenever it's nice outside, go outside, because you're really not going to spread COVID-19 outdoors. There was one that was really strongly in favor of a mask mandate, and we have that now, so we will skip to the next one. One says that they've heard national pundits claiming that the COVID surge was brought over by immigrants. It was not. This is American spread. This is largely spread indoor environments of U.S. citizens in states that opened up too fast. That's really the biggest thing that's driving it right now. There was a question about sharing the data on safety of COVID-19 in pregnancy. What I can do is, so I'll work with Bonnie in our department to make sure that that goes a link to the CDC statement, the ACOG statement, and the data that supported it is put on Facebook, so that folks can really dig through it themselves. But there is a lot of it. It's a very, very safe vaccine, both for pregnant people and for their children. One question was about the availability of monoclonal antibodies. So monoclonal antibodies are recommended in early COVID-19 for folks who are at high risk of complications. They do show some benefit. They are not widely available or as widely available as we would like, largely due to just the healthcare system strain associated with them. They have to be delivered in specialized circumstances because people getting them have COVID. And as you've heard, there's significant strain on our healthcare system. They are available in Jefferson County and in Clallam County. And I will have to look and see if Jefferson Healthcare has shared information for how to access that on their website. So I will look back into that more, but they are available. But generally, what we recommend them for people who are at high risk of complications. So the elderly, people with immunosuppressing conditions, people who have underlying comorbidities that could get them in trouble. Just a couple more. One was to talk about treatments. So how treatment has advanced for COVID-19. Treatment has advanced quite a bit from the very beginning. So it's usually a combination of steroids, remdesivir, monoclonal antibodies. And as a result, before the Delta variant, we were seeing a reduction in the mortality of people who got COVID-19. That is starting to turn around. So that we're seeing that reduction in mortality change and rise again. There's a lot of data that is in kind of the pre-publication status that we are able to see as health officers, which should be published soon, so that people can really dig into it themselves. But we are really seeing those mortality gains be reversed, unfortunately, just by the severity of the variants that are circulating now. That all to say, the best thing to do is to not get one at all. And if you're gonna get it, you really wanna be vaccinated if you do. So it's a really good time to get vaccinated as soon as you can. Last but not least is a little talk about quarantine protocols. So if you are unvaccinated and you get COVID-19 and you are exposed to COVID-19, so say, you went to a party, turns out someone was there who had COVID-19, you will be required to quarantine at home for 10 days from the date of your exposure. And we recommend you get tested at about 5 days in, but you can't leave your house. You gotta really stay there, can't go to work. If you are fully vaccinated and you are exposed to COVID-19, you are not required to quarantine. You can go to work. We do still recommend you get tested at 3 to 5 days, but you do have to wear a mask when you leave the house. And we recommend avoiding high-risk congregate settings. So don't go visit grandma at a long-term care facility. Don't go inside a jail. But otherwise, you can go about your life, but you do have to wear a mask, just like now all the rest of us do. And that is all the questions I had.
Thank you.
One more follow-up?
Sure.
I'm curious. Today you said that 80% of the sequenced tests that we looked at have the Delta variant, when I believe even last week it was, we're sure it's here, but we've never had it sequenced yet. Right.
Oh, we had, so yeah, good
oh,
question.
We had
some, yeah. But we just weren't sequencing enough out of Jefferson County. So we were sequencing just a really tiny percentage of the sequences we've sent, including, I mostly look a lot at the column numbers because they are likely the same as Jefferson. And we've sequenced a ton more in Collin County. That's what's coming back 80% positive, which we're also seeing statewide. But even Jefferson, we're already seeing, seeing a rise in the Delta variant of the sequencing that's starting to return. But it's always about 3 weeks late.
So. And then just to follow up on that, I've heard allegations that, variants are caused by vaccination. Understanding, the way that the epidemiology is that the more people that are getting sick, the more opportunity there is for a variant to develop. So can you, put some truth behind that.
Yes. So that is one of the misconceptions I hear, is that vaccines are causing variants. That is a misunderstanding of how vaccines work and also how evolution works. So basically, variants come from mutations. Mutations come from viral replication. So every time a virus replicates, it will have another chance to mutate. And some of those will succeed and turn into variants. So the more times this virus passes between people, the more mutations it will get and the more chances it will get to build a variant. Vaccination stops that. It's understandable how that misconception happens. It's this idea that maybe the virus is like trying to get around the vaccine. Viruses aren't sentient beings. They are not making plans. They are just mutating at random. And then some of those mutations succeed. Then they mutate more if they're in more people. Okay. Hope that helps.
Sorry about that. Mark, any questions from you?
No questions from me.
Okay, great.
I have one. I can't get this Delta variant out of my head. And I guess, do we have a new idea of what herd immunity looks like? I mean, do we need 90% vaccinated at this point to prevent this from continuing trending in the wrong direction? Do you have any?
Great question. Very likely we would need higher percentages to reach herd immunity from Delta, you know, something closer to 80 or 90%. But what we really need is more uniform immunity. Part of what's allowing it to spread so much is, you know, Washington, even if you look at the Washington data, it'll say that, you know, Washington is 70% vaccinated, but that's not really true. King County is like 80% vaccinated, and then the rest of the state is 30% vaccinated, and that doesn't work. And so we really need, you know, 70% of all of us vaccinated, 70, 80% of all of us vaccinated in order to get to that level of herd immunity. And I think there is also just a little bit of kind of fudging the numbers there, because they'll say 70% of kids 12 and up, because that's who's eligible. And that's true, but that's not the number of people. We really need 70% of people, and likely more like 80% now for Delta variant. But the other thing that we're likely to see, just because we haven't hit the kind of numbers we need, sorry for the background noise, I live on a farm, is that we are going to see lower severity in these cases. So we likely won't, in truth, get to the point where COVID is gone. But we want to get to the point where it actually is like the flu. I know many folks have been suggesting that it's like the flu. It is not. But if we could get enough people vaccinated, it could be. And then nothing shuts down anymore. We live our lives, and we work hard to protect the most vulnerable among us. That would be my goal.
Dr. Mary, to that end, I mean, I've gotten some questions kind of informally about a vaccination mandate for the county. Do you have thoughts on that?
There's certainly consideration of ways to increase vaccination. Vaccine mandates are one. I think it's very likely that they're going to happen for specific sectors as opposed to for the community as a whole. I think at least right now, it's very unlikely that we're going to see a mandate for all people. But I think we are going to see them in more and more sectors. Because at the very least, then we would know that some of the most vulnerable are protected. You know, those who work, you know, healthcare workers came down. You guys know I support that. I want to make sure if you're in a long-term care facility, you know that the staff taking care of you are safe. There are other places where we could consider it. And certainly, you know, places where people don't have the ability to control where they go. When you go to a jail, you don't have the ability to control that situation. So are there places that we could vaccinate well to make sure that those who don't have a choice are safe?
Great. Okay. Sounds like you've got a busy hen back there.
I think egg. So.
All right, Willie Benz, Director of Emergency Management, is joining us by phone today. Welcome, Willie. What have you got for us?
Hey, thank you, Commissioner Dean. Like Commissioner Brotherton had said, everything that's old is kind of new again for us as well. We're spinning up a few programs we had thought we had, if not put to bed, at least we're going to be able to pause for a little bit longer. The first of which is our kind of community masking program. We do have cloth masks and hand sanitizer available to businesses, again, to help them enforce the mask mandate, to help them protect themselves as well as their customers. So cloth masks and hand sanitizer, little individual pump bottles, are available through the Chamber of Commerce. You don't have to be a member to access those. So they've shared with their mailing lists how to reach out and access those resources for free. If you need them, you're also welcome to call us at the Department of Emergency Management if you want some cloth masks and some individual pump bottles of hand sanitizer. We've also asked our community mask making program, those folks making homemade cloth masks, to spin up again. That'll help us extend the stock of cloth masks we have a little bit longer, and it will help us protect our stock of N95 and surgical masks that we continue to have on hand there. Because as Dr. Berry said earlier, we're starting to see those supply chains tightening up a little bit yet again. So we want to make sure we reserve those for the individuals with a greater need for those. So cloth masks available yet again through us, grocery stores, small businesses, wherever you might be, don't hesitate to reach out, and we're happy to drop those off and make those available. We do have a back to school clinic down in Quilcene. That's this coming Monday at the library there. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's Pfizer, which means it's available for kids 12 and up. To help support those kids coming back to school, but also it's available to anyone and everyone who might want to finally jump in and get their first dose, help protect themselves from the rising case levels around here. It's open to anyone, but it can target it at students in the South County area, both Quilcene and Brennan. I'm kind of sad to say that we made that announcement a little over a week ago, and we actually still don't have anyone signed up for that clinic. So please, if you're down in South County and you've been on the fence, you can head to Jefferson County Public Health's website or call us at the Department of Emergency Management, 344-9791, to get signed up. We're partnering with Tri-Area Pharmacy to make this happen, and we really want to get some students vaccinated. We want to get some community members vaccinated. But again, we have a big goose egg staring at us right now and want to get that number up before that clinic.
Willie, is that today, Willie, or next Monday?
No, that's next Monday, the 23rd.
Okay, thank you.
Then we'll be spinning up a few more clinics. We're getting them scheduled this week for later in the month, beginning of September. We want to support those sectors that do have vaccine mandates now, long-term care facilities, healthcare workers, state employees, et cetera. So we'll be getting a few more on the calendar to support those specific sectors, again, to get their employees vaccinated, especially in those high-risk areas. Other than that, again, I just want to stress what a kind of a game changer the Delta variant is. I know a lot of folks are frustrated with this new mask mandate, but you know, we're in a entirely new situation here. It's not just that the numbers are up, we're facing practically a new threat here. So again, thanks to Dr. Berry for her leadership as well as the commissioners. I just want to offer up the fact that here at DEM, we do have our COVID information line still up and running, 344-9791. And that's really for just general questions. If you don't know who to reach out to, you don't know, you know, where to get a mask, how to sign up to get vaccinated, you have questions, but you don't necessarily want to reach out to public health or reach out to your healthcare provider in fear of, adding to their already overburdened workload, please give us a call and we're happy to answer your question or at least guide you to the person who can. Again, we're at 344-9791. Leave a voicemail and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. And if call volume continues to pick up, we'll look at staffing that full-time during business hours yet again. But 344-9791, call us with anything COVID-related and we're happy to point you in the right direction. Again, we are seeing that call volume pick up, though, as the Delta variant takes hold with all the new restrictions, et cetera. So don't hesitate to reach out there and we're happy to help. Other than that, I again had no KPTZ questions. So anything from the commissioners, I'll be happy to answer.
Greg or Heidi?
Not on COVID. I'm just wondering if they see any smoke in our horizon, Willie. Have you been looking at the forecast?
Yeah, thankfully, our smoke event near the end of last week was relatively brief, lasting for just about 36 hours. No smoke in the immediate horizon, although it is hard to predict with new fire starting every day. Not being a meteorologist myself, I continuing to look at like the Cliff Mass blog and the National Weather Service, they haven't sounded the alarms on anything quite yet, but we're still in the midst of fire season. We did have two incident management team fire mobilizations in the state of Washington just yesterday. So nothing immediate, but we're certainly not out of the woods yet in terms of fire season and the potential for smoke. So I'm glad you brought that up. I do want to thank OLECAP for opening their community centers, as well as the Port Townsend Senior Center for opening up on Thursday and Friday to act as cooling centers for our most recent little heat wave, and as well as for a clean air shelter for some of the smoke that we saw on Friday. So again, not quite out of the woods yet, but thankfully that brief period is over for now.
Thanks, Willie.
Great. I think it would be helpful if we could talk with both of you about options for testing. We have a lot of folks who are, you know, coming down with symptoms. Can we walk through, Willie, do you know offhand what the access to rapid tests is locally?
Well, so if you are symptomatic, you can call the nursing line at Jefferson Healthcare. One of their nurses will be back with you within 24 to 48 hours or so to triage your symptoms and see whether you're eligible for a test at their drive-through testing facility. If you're a contact of a positive case, then tests are available at Jefferson Public Health, and one of their contact tracers will be able to work with you on getting that. But like Dr. Berry said, those are beginning to be in short supply. For everyone else, if you're a contact of a contact, then it'll be up to you to seek out a rapid testing kit, whether it be at Safeway's Pharmacy, CVS and Walgreens and Squim and Poulsbo, just out of county, have those tests. But just as recently as a couple of weeks ago, those were being restocked within 48 hours. So they were getting regular shipments and regular resupplies of those testing kits. Now, again, with the demand going up and the supply going down, the time of resupply is increasing slowly but surely. So Jefferson County Public Health's website does have a great resource for testing options with some links to which local stores are going to have those rapid at-home test kits. There is one that is actually FedExed to you, so it's shipped directly to your home. It is $120, but it may be covered by your insurance, and there is a grant program through a federal subsidy where it may be provided to you free of charge that you can apply for. So check out those testing options on the public health website. But yeah, in terms of what's available locally, it's basically just been diminishing day by day as demand goes up and supply goes down. So we're keeping an eye on that, but it's been, again, slowly devolving as things have been steadily getting worse, I'm sad to say.
And I would say, so yeah, we are really experiencing testing shortages again, which is not a place we wanted to be. We're working as hard as we can to change that. But so know that that's going on right now. You should still be able to get a test. If you are sick, you can go to the Jefferson Healthcare drive-thru, and they did a lot of work just on Friday to increase capacity there. So I am hopeful that that will be more available for folks to get tested if you're sick. That is the primary place to go if you're sick. If you are a contact of a case, I think it is important to acknowledge with the dramatic rise in cases, our contact tracing is, we are starting to have to triage our contact tracing to just the most critical cases. So if you are a known contact of a case, if your friend calls you and says, hey, remember when we were hanging out, I'm positive, you should go ahead and quarantine if you are unvaccinated for that 10 days. And you should go ahead and get tested. You can call us at the health department and we will get you a test. If you call us and you say, hey, I'm a contact of a case, we'll get you a test. So you can come get a test from us. We'll make sure that happens. Those are rapid tests. Those are rapid antigen tests. We recommend you you use them 5 days after you were exposed. And just a quick reminder, if you're unvaccinated, you have to quarantine at home for 10 days. If you're vaccinated, you can go about your life, but you do need to wear a mask, and we still recommend you get tested. And we're going to work today on making those even easier to get than having to call us, because I know right now the limitation for both sectors is actually the phones more than anything else to get those.
Yeah. And just to reiterate what you mentioned earlier, Dr. Berry, that for people with mild symptoms, Jefferson Healthcare does have test kits outside available at the Express Clinic that you pick up, swab yourself, and drop at the drive-through testing site. And I know a number of people who have done that, and that's myself included. So I was in contact last week and was very grateful for the ease of that option.
Yeah, I think they said 140 people used that service on Friday. So if you are, if you need one of those, that is a good option for you. So if you have mild symptoms, that if you go to either their Facebook or their Jefferson Healthcare website, you can see the details of exactly where to go. I think it is a good option because right now we want as many people who are getting sick to get tested as soon as possible.
And waiting 36 hours for a call back is scary, and you know, definitely. Puts people, their lives on hold to get that information and assessment. So it's a great option. Greg, did you have a follow-up?
I know, I just wanted to clarify for the self-testing at Jefferson Healthcare, do you have to be a patient at Jefferson Healthcare? Do they have to be your primary care physician or anyone?
You do not. We were able to get that clarified. So if anyone is, if you live in Jefferson County and you feel sick at all, you can go get a self-swab test and drop it off. If you are a contact, you can come to public health and get a rapid test. And no questions asked on those kind of things. And you don't have to have insurance. You don't have to be a citizen. None of that matters. If you're sick, we want you to get tested.
For free.
For free. Yes.
All right. Anything else for the good doctor or Willie Benz? All right. Well, thank you both for your time. I know we've been going long on these and really appreciate all the great information. And let's hope that next week we start seeing a downturn in these numbers. Fingers crossed. All
right. This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.
And again, a reminder, a recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org.